This next session is on community resources, outreach, website, program management, and production discussions. Now, it involves tracks G, R, and M, and there will be a presentation from track G. Amanda, we'll do it locally?
Right, yes.
Okay. Do you have slides, Amanda?
No,
okay, well, that's great. We don't need slides for everything. Okay. So why don't you come on up and do that, and then we'll follow that with a report from track R, and you'll do that also, a part of that. And then also we'll have a couple of remote presentations. No, Peter, are you going to do one here locally, and we have a remote presentation? And then finally, a remote presentation on track M.
Okay. My presentation on the community library aspect of track G is going to be short and sweet. For the last several years for the Ontology Summit, I've set up a group library on Zotero.org, and the nature of the experiment has changed a bit each year with lessons learned. The first year, the first lesson was that one person cannot possibly maintain that library with all of the references generated from the entire, across all the months of the summit, although if you look on Zotero under Ontology Summit 2012, you'll see hundreds of references did make it in there, but it needs to be a collaboratively done thing. This year, some of the same applies to last year. This year, put that lesson to use in actually setting up the library and then handing over the population of it to the community at large, and that did not work. This has everything to do with some things that were brought up earlier in relationship to technologies in general, including ontologies, in that use of it takes time to do this, right? You have to learn a new thing again, how to put information. It's relatively simple once you use it, but you still have to do it, and everybody is busy, you know, with plenty of other stuff anyway, and there's not that much incentive. This is a point Steve Ray brought up. It's under-incentivized, so it didn't get populated. And I think there's also another lesson in there that has to do with the utility of it. Zotero, like so many things, you can folder what the resources you put in there, and you can tag them, but the tags are just tags. They're not, for example, organized into an ontology, so you can't sort through them in a meaningful way. That may or may not affect its usability for a group like this. I didn't do the data collection to find out if that was an obstacle. But that's the end for that particular experiment.
Now I would like to introduce Amanda. We'll talk about the next thing on the agenda, which is some slides.
More positive things to say about outreach. So in order to try and improve our ability to reach people who are not always in every year and familiarly involved in the Ontology Summit, I set up a couple of social media accounts, or started them going with Peter's help, and one on Google Plus and one on Twitter. Now I have the first slide here is a snapshot. It's long and snapshot oddly, but essentially, with both accounts, the primary activity was to rebroadcast announcements about events coming up and reminders about them and more information about the content and try and reach people who weren't already being reached by summit emails and so forth. One thing I'd like you to notice on this Ontology Summit page, it's got 67 followers, but almost 5,000 views. Okay, there's not a huge number of posts, but what did happen is that these posts were shared, well, they were made both public and shared to identified members of the semantic technology community, big data technology, SEMWeb, et cetera, as well as ontology. And by identified, that just means that I knew about them from them being in other people's circles that they've created and shared in those technology communities. And that seemed to actually be effective, to get views on those announcements from people who were not in there already. Now, whether that played out into attendance, I don't know. Right. But there's that. The Twitter account, Ontology Summit, let's see, what do I want to say about that? Well, you can see from this is just a snapshot of its profile. You can see from the notifications that it's actually fairly interactive. People read, retweet, very occasionally tweet direct to it. Also, I created some lists under there, which I publicized at the beginning, but, you know, need republicizing now. Pretty much everybody that followed the account, if they evaluated the Twitter profile to see if they were real or a bot or something, if they were real and seemed to be actually a member of one of these communities or a relevant organization, they got added to these lists. So those are those are lists of interest, I think, to the community generally, in that if you – and they're subscribable. So you can follow these lists. These are public lists that other people on Twitter can follow. So if you follow them, you will suddenly see, you know, much activity from your fellows there. Now, finally, just a little bit of analysis that was freely available through Hootsuite, which just happens to be the tool that I use for social media management. We can see that the growth of interest steadily grew as the summit went on. Under follow growth, that was slide five, sorry, I haven't been saying it. And it also provides a list of what tweets were most popular and how many clicks they got or how many retweets. And the hackathon related tweets got a lot of action. And actually, let me just, that's the last slide, but let me just say something about the hashtags here, because I know, unlike the communities we wanted to reach, this is not a particularly tweetful community, and folks may not understand what the hashtags do. There are a couple of different ways of seeing a tweet if you're a Twitter user or follower, right? One is somebody you follow tweeted it, and it shows up in your stream. Another is it's got a hashtag on it for a topic that you pay attention to. You may have an existing search in your tools that tracks it. So there are people who follow Semantic Web or SEMWeb all the time, linked to data or linked open data all the time, big data all the time. Right? They see those things. So part of the point of this was we need more involvement for those communities. So we make these tweets. It doesn't only get in front of the people who are, you know, who are in the room already or getting emails already. It also gets in front of people who are following those topics. And I think that worked because we occasionally got actually responses back from people who are not in this room and who are in those other communities. What it didn't get, and this is going to be my last comment, what it didn't get is the level of direct and serious and regular involvement we would have liked to see. It didn't pull that many people into the room. It pulled some people in, but not what we'd have liked to see. And I think that has to do with something that has been mentioned, I think, a couple of times already. There are some walls between the traditional ontology community and especially Semantic Web and linked data. And just sharing information isn't enough to get past that, right? more work to be done. And that's a longer discussion than 6 minutes or whatever. So, but that's it.
Thank you. Although I have to say, I think the really effective thing would be to learn how to write titles for tweets and posts that are link bait. You know? Top 10 reasons why your ontology failed.
There's also a well-known fact that tweets with pictures are much, much more effective, but we didn't really have pictures to tweet. We didn't even have an icon. So.
Okay, Marcella, are you online? Marcella Baghetti?
Star 7.
Peter, do you see her there?
Yes, I'm unmuting her.
Marcella, if you can hear us, could you unmute your...
I've unmuted her.
Okay.
Can you test your voice, Marcella?
Hello? Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
Okay. Can I begin my presentation?
Yes. Please let us know what slide you're moving to when you want to move to a new slide.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. This year, I play the role of champion of the Ontology Summit 2014 website development team, which in fact is a very little team. I'm the only member. The aim of this presentation is to introduce a brief report of the mission of the team and the executed activities during these 3 months. Next slide, please. Slide number 2.
Yes.
One thing many of you can be asking is why we need another website if we have the OntologWiki. The OntologWiki stores all contributions and serve as a dynamic knowledge repository of the summit activities. However, some people may get lost with the great volume of information that a wiki page contains. Moreover, its look and feel is not very attractive. Therefore, since the Ontology Summit 2012, each year a parallel public-facing website has been developed. The idea has been to have a website summarizing the most important information related to the Ontology Summit activities. This is a huge effort in and of itself, but it is only a transition task. There are a group of people working in the migration of OntologWiki to a new semantic wiki platform. The public-facing website development is a requirement until the migration of OntologWiki to Ontolog part of Semantic Media Wiki is complete. Slide number 3, please.
Yes.
The mission of the team is to deploy a public-facing and visually simplified website that will provide access to the Ontology communique, information about summit tracks and other activities, as well as links to their OntologWiki pages, a complete list of the weekly conferences presenting their topics and invited panelists, a calendar of the summit events showing weekly sessions, symposiums, and hackathon activities, links to social media like Twitter and Google+, a sponsor acknowledgement page, information about the group of people that support Ontology Summit activities, as well as other resources like recommended readings, archive of discussion list, emails, OntologWiki, etc. Next slide, please.
Okay.
To reach this mission with plans and activities. The first thing to do was to decide about website structure and style. In this sense, we've evaluated 3 choices. The first one, to reuse last year's website, adding some new features like a Google Calendar, links to social media, page with information about sponsor and some minor style changes. The second alternative was to maintain the structure and change the style completely, new color, font, and page layout. And finally, the last one was to start from scratch, designing a new website structure and style. Because the website had to be published quickly, the best choice was the first one. Reuse the last year website with some minor style changes and some new additions. Once this decision has been taken, the development of the pages starts. When the most important pages had been finished, the website was published. Next slide, please.
Okay.
Some other activities are required to be done after the publication of the website. We publish news and events, information about hackathon activities, as well as symposium registration call, among other topics. The new features like Google Calendar and the access to social media were also incorporated after the initial publication of the website. The only task that remains to do is to update the site with the final version of this year communique. Next slide, please. Finally, I want to show you a snapshot of the main page of the Ontology Summit 2014 website. If you have the opportunity to access to the link that is shown in the slide, you'll be able to see the result of the show. Thank you for your attention.
Okay, thank you, Marcella. Now, Peter's going to give a brief presentation also on the website.
Right. I just got this job like this afternoon, so it's not going to have slides. Let me see. And I pasted a few links over to the chat room. So to pick up from where we left off. Yes, as Marcella was mentioning, hopefully the pretty website was transitional because we want the wiki to eventually be pretty. So we started out, getting the same graphics in place. This is the symposium page with the same content coming from the Ontolog wiki, but refactored automatically. The migration was done, I guess, last night to something that looks like this. So one thing that the team, which essentially included Ken Buklowski and Tejas Parikh, who used to be Ken's student now working for IBM, and Simon Sparrow and myself, we had done a few things. One of the things that got resolved was a different skin or different banner, at least at this point, when we categorize the different pages. So, instead of one single site banner across all the pages, now we have like 2014 Ontology Summit, we have the 2014 graphics. This was the 2013 graphics. And if we go to 2012 summit page, they're all on the same wiki. Then we'll have the different. It's not loading. So you can recall from before. And of course, knowing the semantic wiki, you can categorize and put attributes against various information in the wiki. And so with that, the opportunities are huge, but obviously someone will have to work on it. So that's the first thing that went through. Another interesting idea was, of course, in how we will be doing the Ontolog wiki in general, which we call the Ontolog PSMW, Purple Semantic Media Wiki. And it's still in the sandbox here, but if we go to tests, there are several tests that are already implemented, one of which is the inclusion of a calendar. Way back at the beginning, Dan Brickey was saying, why can't I just move the calendar item into my personal calendar? Actually, now you can. Both from Marcella's website as well as from the Ontolog PSMW website. The next test item was the inclusion or framing of Google Documents. So while the team was developing the Ontology Summit draft, the Ontology Summit 2014 communique draft, actually that draft and the evolving version of it had always been available here. The third thing that Simon, these three things are sort of Simon's plans and which he will was hoping to do maybe in the future. The other thing is called discuss. Discuss is somewhat like, I don't know how many people would know discuss, is you post an article or a blog, and then people would have comments below, and then you capture those. So that's the discuss extension, which is now also available on the Ontolog PSMW with Simon and Tejas Parikh sort of putting time into making that happen. So the last thing I might want to demo is, given that we have sort of, let's say, a generic Ontolog banner, we could also have customized banner. So different people will have to send us different things, like this one, Open Ontology Repository. If you have a logo like IAOA, we could sort of overlay the IAOA logo onto one of the banners. And then within the same wiki, we can actually host different communities, and they will all have a slightly different look and feel. End of demo.
Okay, yeah. Thank you. That really looks exciting. Really looks nice. Yeah. So we have one more session before Peter will come back again and give some remarks about the whole enterprise we're engaged in. So the last session is a remote one, and it is a report from Track M, which will be given by Christy Tapp. Christy, are you there?
All right. What we're talking about is the program management aspect to the Ontology Summit. You can advance to slide 2. The objective for Team M, which is the program management team, is to really focus on the process of moving the summit along through its various stages. So we do things like planning, supporting the overall planning and organization. We help provide infrastructure and other things that are needed, work on logistical issues, again, focus on process, and then coordinate the production of the program. One of the things that's unique to this group is that the quality that's dedicated to making sure that the artifacts produced are of, almost research quality. So we help that process along. You could move to slide 3. Here is the OODA loop for the Ontology Summit process. We are now in the 2014 Ontology Summit Symposium. After this, there's a postmortem that happens in May. Then there's a series of months where groups brainstorm. Then in the fall through December, there is some pretty serious planning that happens with the co-organizers. The theme gets selected, the new organizing committee is created, and Team M is supporting that whole process. In January, the summit launches, and it goes through April, and then concludes again with the symposium where the communique gets created and published. Actually, it starts being created before that. If you could go to slide 4. This slide is really showing some of the work, not all of the work, but some of the work that the summit general co-chairs do. They do work with the reps from the co-organizers. They help, actually, they do set direction for the summit. They're going to confirm the theme, the objective, the scope. They do a look back with what's happening here. They look at what's happening out there and then decide where to go. They look again at the process. And again, Team M's role through all of this is just supporting them in their work. The other thing that this group does is they act as the co-lead editors for the summit communique. Go to slide 5, please. So this is what happens during the organization and planning part of the loop. The representatives from all the co-organizers confer to initialize the new summit program and set the direction. They're going to form the new organizing committee. They always need new representatives, new volunteers. Team M could use some more volunteers for next year. We put the plug out there now. They organize and facilitate the team and the work structure, so technical tracks, support tracks, co-champions. We're behind the scenes helping with that. The summit program content, which is 3 to 4 months of focused activities working on the content, defining what the content will be. And then in January, coordinating the summit launch event. So throughout this process, everybody meets regularly to track and assess what's going on and make sure that quality is being adhered to. Another really important part to this whole process is the conformance to the openness policy. This whole collaboration would not work if people weren't sharing, so this is very important. Go to slide 6, please. So this is actually where I came into the process this year. My experience begins here. So during the actual beginning of the summit process in January, there's two things going on simultaneously. One is that the organizing committee is meeting weekly along with the presentations happening weekly. So the planning is happening all along while the presentations are also happening. So Team M supports both groups. The first group is supporting the organizing committee, and that is really making sure that everybody knows when the meetings are, helping prepare agendas, sending out announcements, reminders, links to results of meetings, and then facilitating the actual meeting. Now, specific tasks are things like facilitating and recording the audio conferences. And we've talked a lot today about what slide are you on. That's some of the things that we do, is ask that question and make sure that there's coordination between what people are talking about and what's happening on the chat and then what we need later to be able to edit all these artifacts. So editing chat transcripts, that's really fun. I'll talk about that a little more in the next slide. But we do a little bit of editing, a slight amount of reorganization, and then action items. When it's the organizing committee, we want to make sure that we're capturing who needs to do what next. Then there's some processing to the audio. So once the recording's made of the audio, we want to make sure that it's compressed so that when people download it, it's not too huge. And then editing of things that might happen during an audio conference, like if somebody's dog barks in the background or things like that. We want to take that out. And then collecting analytics. So if you could move to the next slide, slide 7. Okay, so for the virtual events, it's kind of similar to what we do with the organizing committee support. Again, communication tasks. staying on top of all the preparation and the progress. There's a little bit more with slide preparation because we want to make sure we get the slides from the speakers. They need to be named so that they're standard. And if they're not already in PDF format, we convert it, tag it with metadata, and we make sure that the slides have numbers, again, so that when people are referring to numbers when they're talking on the audio, you can find it on the slides. Now, this is where it gets kind of fun, because when the actual sessions are happening, there's a chat going on at the same time, and each week there are probably three presentations. The first presentation takes about, you know, everybody's about half an hour, maybe more, and nobody chats for a little while, and then all of a sudden everybody starts to chat, and they talk, and there's a lot of good dialogue. So you have people talking on the audio, and then you have people chatting on the chat. The next thing that happens is the next person starts speaking, but the people that were talking about the thing from the first presentation keep going. And then the people who are more interested in the next presentation, they start chatting. So now you have interleaved themes in the chat from the first talk and the second talk. And then it kind of keeps going like that until the end, where by the time you have Q&A, everybody's talking about all of the presentations. So some of the light editing that we do is to put that back in order so that if another person comes along in 3 months or 6 months and wants to read it, they can see how that all works together. So when you look at the process chat transcripts, you might notice that the times can be interesting. And that's just because of what's happening with people collaborating. And let's see, we also do conference audio processing. For this, we do, again, compression, a little bit of editing, tagging with metadata, and then something that I have not experienced yet, which is publishing the audio archive to a podcast, so to be resumed. Now, the next slide, slide 8. So after symposium, symposium is a little bit different. There's not quite as much happening on the chat, but there's a lot of good work. So for the symposium production, Team M works very closely with the host personnel, whoever that may be, and also with the co-chairs. Stay on top of the preparation and the progress, again, coordinating logistics, sending things out in the email, receiving all of those kind of coordination tasks. And then after the symposium is over, there's post-processing again, which is to process the audio recording. And we do this a little differently. These get separated into individual presentations and tagged with metadata. And then the chat transcripts get processed and added to the wiki also. So that is all I have for this. Any questions?
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Question, yes.
Steve Ray, CMU. Christy, that really got me starting to think how you sort of laid it out so systematically. Makes me think whether we have considered automating parts of it or automating with a combination of sort of workflow tools plus Mechanical Turk to do some of the disambiguation of the interleaved chat. Seems like you could really streamline this whole process. Have you thought about that?
That's funny you mentioned the streamlining of the chat. One of the things is that you need to have some amount of domain knowledge to be able to reorder them. So you have to know what the people are saying. And I've been learning a lot, so I did not really help much with this at the beginning. I got able to do it, I don't know, probably two-thirds of the way through, but Peter did keep doing most of that work. I'm not sure that Mechanical Turk skill sets could do it, but I think anybody on the in the community could do it. So perhaps it could be taught and coached over, I would say, the next couple of months, and then additional people could help.
Peter?
Yeah, I really want to thank Christy for capturing and documenting the entire process. I mean, this was something I believe was Matthew or someone suggested very early in the organizing committee because we don't really, I mean, up to this point before Christy captured it, we don't really have a captured process most of the stuff was in my head.
It was in your head, Peter. It was in your head.
Yeah. Yeah. So now it's in the open.
Okay. Thank you very much. The final session today will be some remarks from Peter on the Ontology Summit Operation in Perspective.
I guess we will just do slides by my calling out slide numbers, no shared screen. So I asked the chairs to give me a few minutes to speak because I wanted to announce my retirement and maybe take a chance in these few minutes to share a few stories that I've learned in the past 9 ontology summits, about 15 years of work with the ontology community, and over 4 decades of work with information systems. And, of course, the most important part is that I wanted to thank everyone and say goodbye here. So going to the next slide. The very beginning of the ontology summit, it actually started with at least the version that I have been involved, started in 2006 when we had the Upper Ontology Summit. At that time, 4 people got this started: Pat Cassidy, Leo Oberst, Steve Ray, and myself. And 3 of us were ontologue, and of course Steve straddled both communities. And NIST was kind enough to host us. At that time, it was still a 2-day conference. I mean, it's not as elaborate as this. I'll go into that a little more. So we had 2 co-organizers that year. And the great thing was all the stewards of open upper ontologies were represented, I mean, practically. Barry Smith from Buffalo, Doug Leonard was there from Psyche, Nicola Guarino was there representing Dolce, and Aldo Ganjami was on the phone representing Dolce DNS, John Bateman representing the GUM model, Global Upper Model. At that time, actually, it wasn't even called GUM. I think the acronym came after 2006. Matthew West was there representing ISO 15926. Michael Gruninger, if you can see him in that picture, a lot younger than he is now, representing PSL. And Adam Peace was there representing Sumo. It was really a big thing. And the motivation was, I mean, why did we want all the upper ontology people there? Because upper ontologies was like a religion. Everybody believes they have the right religion, and everybody else was wrong. And we come to the recognition that, I mean, if we keep on thinking that, we'll never get anywhere. So that whole group came together. Actually, quite a few people from that year is still in this room. I still remember, like, Michael Ushold was there. Of course, Leo was driving it, and so on. And we realized we were part of the problem that needs to get resolved. And we did. And one of the things that also got us started was sort of drafting a joint communique. So the first year, we had this work process called the joint communique. Probably was a Steve Ray concoction. And that tradition sort of went forward, although, I mean, it was like 2 pages the first year, and it keeps growing. And Nicola Guarino was there, and he said, this is great, but this is not the first one. 8 years ago, some rich guy in Germany actually brought all the top ontologists of the world together in Heidelberg. That was, I think, the week after they had the first voice formal ontology and information systems conference in if it's Nicola, probably in Trento or somewhere in Italy. And this whole group of people were there in Heidelberg. And Nicola was saying, sadly enough, they all left still fighting each other. So nothing really went on. I mean, for another 8 years until we got together at the 2006 Upper Ontology Summit at NIST. So NIST is sort of the organization that got us all started. So going on to the next slide, we continue to innovate and sort of fast forward 9 seasons after we saw the process that Christy just presented. Throughout these 9 years, we chose very clever themes. I mean, either the co-chairs or the co-organizers picked the theme that really would move the community forward every year. And every year, it's not just a 3 or 4 month event, but something that has a very long tail. Ontology-based standards still goes on. Open ontology repositories still moves on. Of course, we still argue what is an ontology. That's a regular topic. But over the years, more co-organizers, more organizing team members, more contributors, more participants, and we're reaching out to more people. The organizing process innovation were steady as well. We moved from a 2-day conference to this year a 4-month series of both virtual and on-site events with like 15 virtual sessions, 6 hackathons, and a community library, a ontology repository, a pretty website and an ugly website, and so on. And we use an organization model structure which is fairly unique to network. The Bob Johansson and Rob Swigart wrote in 1996, I believe, sort of coining this term called a fishnet organization. So if you look at an organization like the fishnet, it's something that you can pick up and form a temporary hierarchy. So, I mean, we as a community, everyone is equal, but temporarily we form a hierarchy. We've got leaders, we've got champions, we've got a sort of temporary structure to execute a task. And when the task is over, the organization disbands. So that's quite novel. I mean, people talk about hierarchical structure, organization, matrix organization. We are neither. We're essentially a fishnet organization. And I believe we established a model where on what a broader networked community of practice might accomplish, particularly when it includes a lot of very smart people. Very smart people tend not to work with one another very well, and the Ontology Summit has so far proved that wrong. I mean, if we organize it properly, it will actually be good. So, of course, if I say I'm retiring, I'm probably pretty old. I mean, I'm not the oldest in the room, but I'm old enough. I mean, and I have to say I've been blessed and very, very lucky. Blessed in the sense that things that I've worked on constantly become sort of much more successful, not because of me, but I mean, it's just the nature of the people that I run into. I mean, even my college roommate ended up being the MIT math department chair. Of course, when we were college roommates, we don't know it. I was looking up Tim Finan and I found out that we probably overlapped at MIT, because when I was at at RLE, and we walk around, and Terry Winogrand's Blocks World was actually in the hallway. You probably remember that. And like 20 years later, I ended up working with Terry and mounted the Doug Engelbart Colloquium at Stanford. So, I mean, all these things come back, and, I mean, people like Andy Shane, who's in the Ontolog community, became like NASA CTO, or, of course, I mean, somebody like George, I mean, getting the top job in information systems R&D in the country and blessing us. So I've contributed some time. I mean, of course, a lot of people did. I did some too. I did some work. I actually did put in some money. I mean, people probably wouldn't realize how much it costs to stand up an infrastructure that could sustain or that could host this kind of work. When I first met Mark Musin, Mark asked, "Who's funding you?" I said, "Nobody, maybe my family." And he said, "Okay, let's work together." And so we did. And I come from sort of fairly different background from most people. I came from manufacturing. So production means a lot more to me than most researchers. So most of our infrastructure are triple redundant, is run on a tier 1 data center and so on. But most importantly, I think I put in a lot of passion, and that was